Hello, everyone. My name is Jeannie Kramer, and I'm on the editorial team of the IBM Data Management Magazine. I'd like to thank you all for attending today's IBM webinar entitled DB2 and Oracle, an Autonomic Computing Comparison. Our speaker for today is Bert Villalpando. Bert is an IBM Executive IT Specialist and has been an IBM employee since 1998, with professional database experience dating back to 1984. He currently works for the North America Data Server Tech Sales Team, supporting pre-sales for a number of IBM technologies. Bert holds numerous DB2, Oracle, and other certifications. He also is currently serving on the IBM IT Certification Board and is an IBM Plateau Level 1 inventor. So without further ado, I'd like to turn the call over to Bert.
Thanks, Jeannie. Hi, I'm Bert Villalpando. Some of you folks may remember me from a chat with Lab about 6 months ago when I compared DB2 and Oracle's architecture. That was a well-attended session, and I had a lengthy introduction to myself then. I won't be giving that introduction again because I see this as basically an ongoing series, part two. And today I'd like to talk about autonomic computing and compare the DB2 and Oracle features in that regard. First of all, though, I'd like to congratulate our Jewish listeners for Rosh Hashanah, and I just want to make the note that if you are not able to attend live, that we will have a replay available for all those folks that aren't able to come today live and get that information as soon as possible. Also, we're using a new technology for the Chat with Lab called ON24. One of the benefits to this technology that I see is it has a very efficient Q&A process. So today we're going to do something different. We're going to have all the Q&A come in through the messaging. So for those of you that are listening, go ahead and type in your questions on the Q&A, and we will be answering those questions according to what we think is the widest scope question first for the audience members so that we get the most out of our time, and then be answering to the more esoteric or specific or unusual questions. We will try to cover them all. We have plenty of time, and we hope that we can cover them all. But this way we can do them in an orderly way and hopefully get all the questions answered. All right, so our topic today is autonomic computing. And I'm going to define that first. What do I mean by that? And then I'm going to go into five different subjects. First, memory, then storage and utility throttling, configuration parameters, how we do those in the databases, and finally, automatic maintenance. So I see this as five separate sections. Now, I want you to note that DB2 9.7 editions provide all the autonomic computing features I'm going to talk about here today. So it doesn't matter if you're an Express Edition or Workgroup or Enterprise, you get this with DB2. By contrast, though, many of the comparable autonomic computing features in Oracle that I will be discussing only come with the Enterprise Edition. So if some of you folks aren't using Enterprise, I may be talking about an autonomic computing feature that you don't even know about because you aren't using that edition. I think that's an interesting point. I thought I would make that up front. All right, moving on to slide four. I'd like to define autonomic computing, what it means. If you haven't heard it, the term before, it really basically is talking about computing systems that can manage themselves. That is, they can dynamically adapt and change according to business practice policies and objectives. They are able to learn and adapt. The autonomic computing experts in the world break it down into four categories, self-configuring, self-healing, self-optimizing, and self-protecting, or the autonomic CHOP. So if we have any of those characteristics, even one of them in a database system, for example, we consider it autonomic. In the autonomic world, we're really just barely scratching the surface and getting started. That is in DB2 or Oracle or any database, but at least we're getting it going. And we're going to talk about those autonomic computing features here in detail. Now, the term autonomics, if you were to Google that, you would find it's talking about the ability of the body to regulate itself. So that is, it does things on its own. It doesn't have to be told. When you get hot, like if you're running, your body cools itself down with sweat. Or if you have a light shine in your eye at night, it'll dilate the pupil so that the retina will protect itself. So those kind of things are happening automatically in the human body. So if you were walking in the woods and you saw a bear, you don't have to type into some console, alter heart rate set high. And that's just going to happen so that you have the oxygen and the adrenaline to be able to run. And the question is, why can't computing systems be more smart like that and more self-protecting, self-healing, self-optimizing, and self-configuring? Well, they can be. And that's what we're going to discuss in more detail today. So slide five, I'd like to get started with talking about self-tuning memory manager. So this discussion is about memory autonomics. And the question is, do I have to know about the DB2 cache-based model in order to tune it? And the answer is no. We have the ability with self-tuning memory manager to tune our memory out of the box and optimize our workload up to 60 times per hour automatically, and do that with one parameter that turns it off and on. It's called self-tuning mem. In a DB2 created database, this is on by default unless you're using database partitioning. So for a DPF, this is off by default, but for all other databases, it's on by default. And of course, you can flip it off if you don't want it to be on. And we also share with the operating system with a separate parameter called database memory. If that's set to automatic, then we share the OS. And if we want to do self-tuning at all, we share it to on. Now, what we're talking about here is our cache-based memory. In DB2, that's the buffer pools, package cache, lock list, and the sorting. There are other memory pools that are there, but this represents the biggest part of our cache-based memory. So you can think of it pretty much as the system global memory for those of you in Oracle. We do have a way to control our program global area memory. We call that functional-based or application-based, and that parameter has been around for a long time. Instance memory controls that. So I'm really going to be talking about the cache-based or the system global area for the Oracle DBAs here in detail. And in slide six, this shows a picture of basically how it works. So if you look at this memory model, first of all, focus in on the blue, the database memory, and assume for right now that that's a fixed amount of memory. Now, if you notice the buffer pools, that's what we call our data cache area in DB2 for Oracle DBAs, all can share with each other. It doesn't matter what page size they are. We don't call them block sizes. We call them page sizes in DB2. But if you have a buffer pool 1 as a 16K page size and buffer pool was an 8, you can still share between each other. The page size doesn't stop that. And it also can share with our package cache, our lock list, and our sorting areas. This memory represents the bulk of our cache-based memory in the database memory area. And all these can participate. Now, what's interesting with DB2 is we can open this up to the operating system with another parameter that I'll be talking about here in a second. I've already alluded to it, but I'll get in more detail here in the next slide. The database memory can be opened up, and the operating system can give it more memory, and that whole blue square then would grow, and you would get more database memory to be shared amongst all those other shared pools. And this is the key, it can give it back automatically to the OS. So that's a really cool feature with DB2, is that, and I think it's a DB2 advantage, memory can be taken from or given back to the operating system automatically without the DBA to be involved. Now, you can set limits for this with a registry variable that I mentioned on this slide here at the bottom. You don't have to do this, but in some cases, it's advisable to do that. And basically, you're saying, I want this database to grow in this size, no bigger, and get no smaller if I'm sharing to the OS. Sharing to the OS is an option. But if you're doing it, you can limit the memory range size of its growth with that registry variable shown there at the bottom of the slide. Slide seven. So this must be really difficult to set up, right? Not at all. In fact, self-tuning memory itself is turned on with that variable that I talked about, self-tuning mem on or off. Then you get self-tuning memory happening. If you flip it off, all memory areas immediately stop sharing, and they stay at the size that they were at when the switch was flipped. To get it to share to the OS is the database memory configuration parameter shown here. That one also was you can flip on and off. If you start flipping it, if you flip it on to automatic, then it will give to the operating system and take back from the operating system at its own discretion. So once you've done that, self-tuning memory is on. It's either on just for the database memory or sharing to the OS. And now your each of your individual data buffer pools, for example, can be set to automatic or a size. So if you see here down in this alter buffer pool statement or create buffer pool, either one, when you create or alter the buffer pool, you either say the size in pages, I want it to be 1,000 pages, or automatic. If you say size in pages, then that buffer pool is static and does not participate in self-tuning memory management. It's basically skipped. The others will that are like that, but that one won't. But if you change it to automatic, then it does participate in memory sharing. I find that to be a DB2 advantage. Memory can be taken from, a buffer pool can be of any page size and can participate in automatic memory management or be set to a static size to avoid automatic memory management. Slide 8. The rest of the memory heaps are done with database or database manager configuration parameters shown here. You have to turn the sheep thresh pages on to zero in order for STMM to be working for any of the sorting. And then once you do that, you set them to a number of pages or to automatic. And when you do that, then sorting can participate in self-tuning as well. And then the package cache and the lock list are also able to be shared. So for Oracle folks, you understand what sorting means, and buffer pool, as we spoke about, is like the data cache, data buffer cache, but the package cache is, think of it as a statement cache in Oracle. And there isn't an equivalent of lock list in Oracle. We do locking in memory with DB2, so that might be kind of a new idea for you. We require lock memory because we don't do locking on disk. We do it in memory. So that's another discussion, but that's what the lock list is about. So the sorting, the package cache, and lock list memory can also be turned on or off individually for each of those. And I find that to be a DB2 advantage as well, that any memory area can be individually turned on for automatic use or set to a fixed size, avoiding automatic use. So in slide 9, why is this thing so useful? Well, try to imagine when you're new to DB2, you may not know the best sizes to set all these. It's very common for some folks to just set this automatic and let DB2 tune itself, and they leave it like that. Others will let it tune itself for a time and then flip the self-tuning off and take it from there with slight adjustments on their own. It's really up to you how you want to use it. Now, why it can be so useful is because if you have a database that fluctuates its memory usage greatly by hour or by day, say it's more of a reporting in the weekends and more of an OLTP on the weekdays, it might use sorting areas or buffer pools differently. Well, DB2 can give that area more memory, automatically adjusting for itself, tuning on the fly, if you will. So we've seen some benchmarks where we even can expertly tune a database, but with STMM turned on, can even get better throughput and transaction per minute as the database makes slight adjustments based on a differing kind of workload. It doesn't always happen, and I'm not making that claim here, but it can happen for many folks. Plus, databases that are repository databases that are not need to be heavily tuned can just tune themselves and be set and forgotten without any real DBA intervention, leaving the DBA to focus on the more critical databases that may need their intervention in more detail. So I have some other examples here of why you may use it, but the bottom line here is that STMM can help a DBA get up to speed on getting the majority of their databases tuned pretty dang good with minimal knowledge of our cache-based memory system in DB2. So going to slide 10, this is the comparison part. So some of you Oracle DBAs have listened and say, well, we got that in Oracle. We've had that a long time, as a matter of fact. We've even had it longer than DB2 has. And the fact that is that Oracle has offered SGA target and PGA target for a long time. And it was out in editions of Oracle before it was out in editions of DB2. But I want you to consider the comparison carefully here. First of all, the discussion is a little convoluted because when Oracle talks about automatic memory management, it's really talking about the memory target parameter that sits on top of SGA and PGA aggregate. So if you're using SGA target or PGA aggregate target, you can control them both with memory target. And that's great. That's a fine parameter that will do that for you. I'm really going to focus more on SGA target because that's closer to SDMM. And remember, our PGA aggregate target was like our DB2 instance memory, and they're very similar. So focusing on SGA target, where the bulk of your system global area is controlled, keep this in mind. That controls the DB cache, the shared pool, the Java pool, the large pool, and the pretty much now defunct streams pool. Keep in mind also that DB cache, when we're talking about that, is your default block size cache. Okay, so Oracle DBAs know what that means. DB2 folks, what that means is when you create a database in Oracle, you have a cache of a particular block size, think of page size like in DB2, and that cache is what you would expect most of your data to be stored in because that's your main data buffer cache. You can do other non-standard block size pools. So let's consider why Oracle AMM is not like STMM. So my first point here is any non-standard block size pool that's not part of the DB cache can be have a cache defined for it and be manipulated separately, but it does not participate in automatic shared memory management. SGA target does not do anything with those non-standard block size data caches. You're on your own for them. Remember, in STMM, it manages any or all buffer pools of any page size. So all the caches can participate or only the ones that you want. So that's one big difference there. The second difference is, and this is also huge, is that AMM, automatic memory management, can manually allocate to memory max target. That's true. So it can grow the memory and take from the operating system on its own. But it never gives back on its own. That requires DBA intervention to do an alter and reclaim that memory from the OS with a DBA intervention. STMM can automatically give it back to the operating system if the database isn't using it. That's part of the feature of STMM and also turns out to be a huge advantage. Some say that what that allows is for instances to share memory to the OS between themselves. So if one is being heavily used and the other isn't, it'll give it back to the OS, and the OS will then give it to another instance. So two instances on the same server can basically be optimally sharing memory between themselves through the operating system. This simply isn't available in Oracle. The SGA pools also are managed are all or nothing. So consider, when you set the SGA target, you're either turning that on or not. If you turn it on, then all those pools are opted in. You can't say, I only want to do the Java pool and make that static. I want to only have the DB cache size to be static or only one of these. You can't set them. You can set them to zero, but you can't set them to a set size because in Oracle, when you set a individual pool to a set size, that becomes a minimum. It's not really a set size, it's just a minimum, and it still participates in automatic memory management. So all those pools are basically all or nothing. Remember, in DB2, STMM, it allows any memory cache pool to be opted in or out of the automatic memory management. So that gives you flexibility that you don't see in Oracle. And finally, consider also the keep and recycle pools match the DB cache block size, and they are also not part of automatic memory management. And keeping or pinning is an important concept that basically is managed on your own. You don't really do that with SGA target. In DB2, we do pinning by assigning one table to one buffer pool, say one table and one table space to one buffer pool. That table will never be cached out because it's the only one that uses it. So we can have that be opted in or out of automatic shared memory at our decision. So we can do pinning in DB2, basically, keeping memory, carving it up and having it be static set or automatically shared. It doesn't matter. So there's more flexibility in that regard, too. So the bottom line of this slide here is that Oracle DBA's Learning DB2 will love the DB2 self-tuning memory manager ease of use, its power, and its flexibility. So moving on to slide 11, I'd like to talk about storage. Automatic storage is a feature that's been around DB2 for quite a while. It came out in release 8.2. We call that the Stinger release. And it did so well that it's actually part of the default behavior of DB2 starting with version 9. So automatic storage is going to be yes for a database by default. Now, automatic storage is so simple to set up, it's almost scary. You create the database, and you say automatic storage on, and you give it a path or paths or a drive or drives, and that's it. That's the setup. Okay? Or you can alter the database and add automatic storage by saying on path drive, and that'll initiate automatic storage for a database that wasn't created that way. And that's the same command that you use to give more path or drive if you start to run out of storage. You just say alter database, add storage, and now you have more storage for the automatic storage to work. So once that is set up for at the database level, by the way, not the instance or server level, just in that database, then when you say create table space, you can use the keywords managed by automatic storage, and that's it. You never touch that table space again. DB2 under the covers will create all the data files, its names, its locations, automatically grow them or auto-extend them, automatically stripe them, and so on. You don't do anything but give more storage. And if you want to intervene, then you can go ahead and reclaim storage with another set of commands, but that's it. There's even a command that you can take a regular table space that's not automatic storage in a database and convert it to automatic storage if you want to. Now, that means you can have table spaces that exist that are some automatic storage and some that aren't, that are done in a traditional manner. It's up to you. But once automatic storage is initiated in the database, creating or altering the table space to be automatic storage is all you have to do, and then DB2 handles the rest. And then all you have to do is give more storage to the database as you see it growing and being filled up. That's it. Well, I find that to be the DB2 advantage is that automatic storage in DB2 is extremely simple to use and to set up, and every DBA ends up using it. Because even if you're not sold on using it for your heavy production systems, you certainly be using it for your repository databases and your test and development databases at minimum. I find, though, that many customers have tested this thoroughly and are using this in their production as well for even heavily used production database systems. So what does that mean? Well, I've read a paper from Oracle on Autonomics, by the way. It was interesting. And one of the things they said is that we have ASM, Automatic Storage Management. It's much more powerful than DB2's Automatic Storage. And that's true. It's a storage management system, basically. It requires its own instance, its own home, its own authentication, its own init file, its own memory, and so on. It's the first instance up on that server and the last down. All the databases that use the storage from that ASM instance are critically tied to it. I have found in my questions, and you guys can send me your cards or letters or say here in the Q&A if you like, that they don't use it unless they're a rack shop, that the overhead of setting this up and using it are such that non-rack shops just typically don't use it. I don't know why. I haven't been able to use this myself. I tried one day, and I have to admit I didn't give a lot of time to it. It wasn't trivial like learning DB2's automatic storage. So I want to stay neutral there, and I know folks are using it successfully. But the fact it remains that most Oracle shops that aren't rack don't use it because of its learning curve and its overhead. So that's the bottom line to DB2, is that all DBAs will use DB2's automatic storage. It's at the database level, not at the server level. Some databases can use it and some not. And in order to manage it, it's super simple. So that's the bottom line to automatic storage in DB2 versus Oracle. My next topic on slide 13 will touch on something that's interesting called utility throttling. Now, utility throttling concept is this. You don't want utilities that are running, like loads and reorgs and index cleanups and things like that, backups, to affect your production transaction system. So DB2 has a built-in way with an instance parameter called util_impact_lim that defaults to 10 that says all utilities together cannot take more than 10% of the resources of DB2. The other 90 is going to be given to your transaction system, period. Well, now that you've carved out only 10% possible limit to the amount of resources being used by all utilities, when you submit those utilities or when they're submitted on their own behalf of the engine, some things are just run on their own, like an asynchronous index cleanup, then the util impact priority can prioritize those individual utilities running within that limit. So, for example, you can run backup and say util impact priority 99, which is high, or run stats util impact priority 5, which is low. And you will get a weighted more use of the limit by one utility versus another. It's easy to manage this. You can do it through a GUI, like the control center has a manage utilities. And on that screen will be the util impact limit that you can change and set dynamically anytime. And it'll show a listing of all the utilities running and what their util impact priority is. If you're a line command driven person, then you just say list utility, show detail. All of them running will have their detail of their running, and they will have a utility number, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, and so on. And you simply set util impact priority for utility 5 to priority 85. And that'll change the util impact priority for that utility and give it more or less juice. And if you want to change the util impact limb, that's a DBM configuration parameter change. And you just say update DBM config util impact limit and maybe change it to 20% to give all utilities more resource. It's that simple. So that is the DB2 advantage, is that util impact throttling is built into DB2. It's automatically exploited. You're using it in DB2 every day, whether you realize it or not. These are happening by default. Even utilities that are automatically submitted will have a default util impact priority. I believe most of them are 50. And it doesn't require any setup. Really, all you do is tweak it. So you say, I need more limit, or I want this for utility to have a higher or lower priority, and that's it. Otherwise, it just runs for you. So going on to slide 14, this is my contrast to the way it's done in Oracle. Only a couple utilities like backup and data pump have options that can affect this to some degree, like the rate option of the channel command in backup or the parallel parameter in data pump can affect that to some degree. There really isn't anything like it. Now, again, in that paper that I read from Oracle, they said, we have resource plans. And resource plans are much more comprehensive and thorough and more powerful than the util impact limit of DB2. And that also is true. But that requires you to set up the resource plan in order to use it. It's not built in. And what wasn't said in the paper is that DB2 has a similar kind of feature called the workload manager. And this is something you have to set up as well in order to manage all your workloads, not just utilities, but any kind. So the question remains, are you going to be setting up these resource manager packages and creating consumer groups and plan directives and all that just to throttle utilities? Send me your cards and letters and give me your emails. Tell me if you're doing that. I haven't found one DBA yet that sets up resource plans just to throttle utilities. I think that argument is a little weak. So you certainly can do it, but are you doing it? The question is, are you using this to throttle utilities? Well, in DB2, it's already built in. You will be using it, and then you just tweak it from there. DBAs will love the DB2 utility throttling power and built-in ease of use. All right, I'm moving on to slide 15. This is discussion on auto-configure. Auto-configure is really interesting. It's an all-in-one parameter tuning utility. Auto-configure is a way to get any performance-related parameter tuned all at once. So we don't use templates in DB2. We don't use p-file copies. We create the database, and in the create database subcommand is auto-configure, and it creates the database tuned right out the box. And you can run auto-configure any time afterwards, not just at database creation time. And auto-configure basically works by just giving it a little bit of information about your database, answering 10 user input values, and then the autonomics will automatically sense everything else you need to know in order to tune these parameters. So let me explain that. Going on to slide 16. So here at the left, you see 10 user input values. I'm going to get into detail what those are in a second. But we have 10 user values. Configure automatically detects the environment. So very specific things about your environment it knows. And then it uses the expert heuristics with all the algorithms that have been created over time, all the things that you would read in the health center that tells you how to tune a parameter, just built in. And it takes those values, the automatically detected characteristics, and the expert in a box information, puts it into the auto-configure model, and spits out your configuration settings completely, totally unique and tailor-made for that database, for that situation. That's how it works. Going on to slide 17, the 10 values that you're talking about describe the database, what it's used for, what it does, basically, how its memory and other things that are not just related to memory are affected. So if you see these 10 values, the first thing it wants to know is how much of the memory that I already know is existing. That's something auto-configure knows. How much am I dedicating to get started with to the instance? So how much total memory do I have to work with here? And you tell it, 25% or whatever, 10%, 50%. Then the workload type, is it an OLTP or is it a warehouse or something in between, like an ODS? And then how many number of statements per unit of work and how many transactions per minute does this application, the typical application running against this database, need? And then your administration priority. Are you optimizing for more transactions per minute or better recovery time? This has a lot to do with checkpoints. Just like in Oracle, DB2 has the way to take checkpoints. The more often the checkpoint's taken, the faster you can recover. But when a checkpoint's taken, everything needs to be flushed from buffers down to disk, and it takes a little bit of time, so it affects performance. And you could even pick an in-between, saying, well, I really want to split the difference and have a both. Then it asks, is the data populated? Should I consider that? And then here, the next ones are local remote applications. The vernacular here is, you might not be familiar with Oracle DBAs. We call an application, think of it as a session. So we want to know how many local sessions and remote sessions do we need to account for. And finally, isolation. Now, this is a unique thing to DB2 as well. We do our locking in memory. And we do ANSI-based isolation, and so we can have recursible, repeatable read, which needs more memory, or UR, which is a dirty read, which needs no memory, or something in between. So you answer that question. And then you also say, can I change the buffer pool? Have you fixed them all in size, or can I change their fixed size? Can I fool around with the buffer pool sizes or not? And if you say yes, then you've answered the 10 questions. Any question you don't answer defaults to the default value that are shown here. The DB2 advantage is that your database environment usage is described in detail and is much more flexible than just a simple small, medium, large template. So if you look at slide 18, these are the things that auto-configure automatically or autonomically detects: your disk and spindle usage, your memory size, your CPU, your OS feature, the type and release, the size of your databases, the numbers of tables, indexes, table spaces, and all of your data cache in your buffer pool. It knows all of this. And so that also is a DB2 advantage. So the DB2 advantage is your unique and current environment is automatically detected and is used as a basis for tuning all of your performance parameter settings. This is the output from that. So these are actual instance database and buffer pool setting parameters. Those of you new to DB2 may not know what these parameters do. Those of you old to DB2 may forget what these parameters do. You don't need to really know what these parameters are unless you start to get it down into really heavy-duty tuning that requires you to do that one-on-one. I'm not claiming auto-configure means you can't tune it even a little bit better, but it certainly can get all of these performance-based parameters set for you very, very well. Now, if you look at this, the instance has some parameters, the database has some parameters, and in the database and the buffer pool, you'll see in red about the instance parameters that were set and the database parameters that were set and the buffer pools are set. So this is the output from auto-configure, okay? And you don't know what these parameters mean. Or long-time DB2 users do, and they've tuned these individually, but new folks may not. And the nice thing about auto-configure is right out the box, right away, you may not have to learn these, because auto-configure will set them for you based on your environment and the answers to your 10 questions. Now, the ones that are marked in red with an asterisk are also self-tunable. Self-tuning memory management came after auto-configure, and now we can say the lock list can be set to a fixed size, or it can be set to automatic. If it's set to a fixed size, auto-configure may recommend a different fixed size. So auto-configure and self-tuning memory management are complementary. They're not either or one better than the other, as I've seen in some discussion forums. They're completely different things. The self-tuning memory management does your data buffer, does your cache-based memory, and allows you to set that automatic. Auto-configure can help you set the static ones to a best size and affect all other parameters that affect performance. So keep in mind that those two things are complementary. The DB2 advantage is that all performance parameters and buffer pool settings can be tuned in one fell swoop. Think of that. Usually you tune a parameter one at a time. And that's actually the right way to do that. It's a scientific method. You make one change to you keep the control group and you see how it works, and if that's good, then you move on. But this allows us to go ahead and change multiple parameters all at once. Now, there's two ways to do auto-configure. The first way that most folks learn is you use the Control Center GUI. So that's a free GUI that comes with all editions of DB2. Like I said earlier, all this stuff comes with all editions of DB2. And you go through the Control Center and you just answer those 10 questions with slide bars and whatever, drop downs and selects. And you walk through that screen. You then come up to the end where it shows you your current value and your suggested value. And if your suggested value is significantly different, then you may consider taking the next step of actually making those changes. So you can go through auto-configure GUI and just see if maybe some of your parameters need to be tweaked. At this point, you can go ahead and try to individually tune them if that's what you feel more comfortable with, or you can go ahead and let it rip and tune all of these all at once. I will tell you, if you hit on the next button here, and I don't show that in this slide, it will give you a script that has all your current settings commented it out and all the new proposed settings not commented it out, but ready to run. When you run that script, all your changes will be made all at once. If for any reason you didn't like that, you found out it really didn't help improve performance, you can easily back it out by taking the uncomments out of the first part of that script and rerunning them. So there really isn't a downside to that. Going on to slide 22, this is how you would set auto-configure using a command line. I see this used more often with a mature database that has been set and running for a long time. The GUI is probably when you're setting up a database for the first time. The reason why I say that is because you can run this script once a quarter or once a month in some kind of scheduled job, a cron job or something. And if you say apply none, you only get reports out that tell you your current and recommended values. It won't do any applying of the changes. So you can basically test the heartbeat of your tuning by running this every so often and looking at the output from time to time to see if your parameters can be tweaked and made even better. Now, you really only need to do this when any of the sensed input or the 10 question issues are affected in somehow. You get more memory or you got more disk or something happens that has a need for you to look at the tuning again. So it may be overkill to do that once a month even, but it's just something you could do once a month, once a quarter, and then, you know, check it out and say, gee, it would be better if we tweak these parameters to get even more out of the system, because that's what auto-configure is telling us. One of the things I will say is I once gave this, let me show you the output here. I'm sorry, I'll give you my anecdote later. On slide 23, this is the output from that command line. It's an example of showing the current value and recommended value. So I gave this once lecture in Toronto, and some of the lab folks were there, and they said they wanted to add to what I was saying, and I thought maybe I said something wrong. I was learning about it then. I thought, what did I say? And actually, he interrupted me to tell me that in the help desk, one of the top questions they ask now when they have a production problem, somebody is complaining about performance, is right after asking them if they've done run stats on the tables, is have you run auto-configure? If the answer is no, then that's the first thing that we do, because it tends to break loose really easy to solve production problems or performance problems right away. So on slide 24, let's consider that. So how does that work in Oracle? Don't we have something like that? Well, I've talked with many DBAs. They say, hey, the database configuration system gives us templates, and that helps us with parameter tuning. Isn't that the same? Well, as I've shown before, it's not quite as granular and specific. It doesn't automatically sense your environment and give you the detail of all those questions. So it's helpful to get started, but it's not the same. And consider it's only for the creation of the database. After that, you don't run it again to tune the database. So even if it did help you get your database started out, it won't help you on an ongoing basis. So then Oracle folks say, well, yeah, but that's what ADDM is for. That shows us when a parameter is out of whack. It'll highlight it as an issue and help me tune it. And that's true. That's similar to our Optum Performance Manager, for example. We have that. Even our health monitor built into DB2 does that. So you can see an out-of-whack parameter and fix it with the help of a monitor like that. So there's not to minimize the effectiveness of ADDM in that regard. But I want you to consider ADDM is sort of like a gauge on your car that, say, you were driving down the road and you saw your car heating up. It was running hot. That's ADDM telling you there's a problem. So you take it into your car shop, and he says, you have a hole in your radiator. If I plug it, it'll be fixed. So you say, go for it. And then you use ADDM to fix that problem. So now you fix your radiator, you drive out, and your car's not hot anymore. And you say, problem solved, right? Well, that's true. But let me ask you a question. Is your engine tuned? No. Okay, it fixed a problem that it only saw as a problem. If you're only running slightly hot, you might not have even noticed it. ADDM only flags exceptions, and our health monitor and OPM will see things that are problems. But wouldn't you like to see something before was a problem? Wouldn't you like to be able to tune your car all at once and prevent something like ADDM even having to tell you there's a problem? So fixing a problem is different than tuning your database, and that's what auto-configure does. It's a huge head start on learning how to tune. It's an all-in-one performance parameter tuning expert in a box. The bottom line is DBAs will love using it, and it's an easy thing to learn. All right, so I'm on slide 25. This is my last topic, automatic maintenance. I would really wish they would have called this autonomic maintenance because it's using autonomics. I don't know why we called it automatic. There is a difference, by the way. Automatic is something we've been doing in data processing for years. You can schedule a job that does a run stat on all of your tables. Force a run stat on every table, or force a backup right now. That you can do that every week, every day, whatever. That's automatic. Autonomics asks the question, do I really need to do it? Do I need to do run stats on this table? Because if I don't, I'm not going to. Do I need a backup right now? Well, there's not that many changes to the database, so I don't need to run the backup. The autonomics is more intelligent than just automatic. So I wish they would have called this autonomic maintenance, but oh well. Anyway, with DB2's automatic maintenance, it performs backups, run stats, and reorgs for you, and you have potential to not have to ever do that again in your database. Imagine that. For some of your databases, like your test production and ones that are not that critical, you can set this and walk away and never have to do a backup or run stat or reorg job again. And it's not about setting jobs. It's about determining a best window, and the DB2 engine itself does the work. It does it with a particular process. It's called the DB2 Autonomic Computing Daemon, DB2 ACD. But it's part of DB2 that's either flipped on or not. If it's running, then it looks for a best time that you've determined it, and it starts to do the work. Now, you set it up with an easy-to-use GUI, our free admin tools that we give out, the Data Studio or Control Center, they both have this GUI. And then once it's running, it has a learning capability in order to know how to run best time after time. So let me describe, first show you how you set it up. Like, Data Studio has a automatic maintenance GUI, or a wizard, if you will, or a task assistant. It's called different things. And you just run through the questions. I want to set this up, not that. I want this to work here, and I don't want that to work there. You just answer all the questions. In fact, you don't really even need me to lecture you here to use it. I found it's very simple to use. But this lecture will help you appreciate what's going on behind the scenes when you do choose to use it. And also, I want to state that once you set it up one database going through the GUI, you don't have to do that reiteratively with other databases if they have a similar maintenance need. So if you have one for test, you can push it out to production the same way. Or if you create a database and you're an ISV, a vendor, and you want to apply this to all your customers' databases, you simply get the policy information with a couple of procedures, stored procedures, and you run the set with a couple of stored procedures. And what it's doing is taking out this configuration information in an XML file, and then you just push out that XML file to the next database that you want to apply this to. So the get and policy file, set policy and policy file are a batch way of doing this, but I recommend that you do walk through it one time in the GUI to see how it looks, and you don't start trying to code XML files raw from the beginning, which you could, but I recommend you use the GUI first to see how it works. Once you've set it up, there's a couple of things you need to know. It has a concept of windows. An online or an offline window. It does online work during the online window and offline work during an offline window. I'll kind of give you an example of why you'd want those windows. But you set those windows on, and that's when the autonomic maintenance starts to do its thing. So the DB2 ACD daemon is running, and every couple of hours it wakes up and says, hey, am I in my window? And then it says, oh, yes, I am, and it starts to do the work. In fact, when I first learned about it, I envisioned it as sort of like a little robot that does DBA work for you right out of the database. It's not a scheduled job. It's part of the engine. And he starts doing the work that you've asked him to do in those windows. Now, there's a concept of notification. He likes to work by exception. If you told him to do something, like do a backup, and then he determines he needs to but can't because you told him to back up the tape and the tape drive is off, then he'll notify you through the regular notification vehicle built into DB2. And I won't get into details about that, but you can imagine it can be an email or a page or whatever, or just an entry into the notification log. That's like an alert log in Oracle, at minimum. Also, there's the idea of throttling. I talked about maintenance or utility throttling earlier. He obeys throttling, except you can't throttle him down to nothing. So you can't take that util impact limb and make it less than 7%. You can't ask him to do a lot of utility work and then throttle him so that he can't. So he kind of fudges on that a bit. He still works under throttling to some degree, but he does. If you ask automatic maintenance to do utility work, then he's going to consider himself more of a priority than your regular utilities. So going on to slide 28. When you walk through the GUI, you'll be setting up DB configuration parameters, and those are the key to having the autonomic computing daemon know what to do. If you flip on auto maint at the top, then auto maintenance is ready to roll with any individual feature, and you flip on those individual features with the on or off DB configuration parameter. If you use the GUI, this happens for you automatically, or you can do this set DB configuration parameter manually if you like, either one. I won't go into details of all of them, but you can see it's kind of a hierarchical tree. Auto maintenance on, and then auto database backup is off of it, and you can have the rest turned off, and all it does is automatically back up. If you have auto DB backup off and you have auto table maintenance on, then you want to have at least one of those auto table maintenance features turned on, like it might automatically do run steps. I will mention this. There was an error in the article that compared autonomics of Oracle and DB2 in that paper. It said that there was nothing that happened by default in DB2. It does in Oracle. That is not correct. When you create a DB2 database, automatic table maintenance run stats is on for 23 hours a day, 7 days a week, right out of the box. So that's the default feature in DB2. But when you create a database, if you otherwise don't say, it will autonomically do your run stats for you, just like it does in Oracle. So I want to make a verbal correction to that paper here. The rest of them, though, you do have to flip on and get them to work, either through the GUI or through a XML file or some other way. Okay, so let's talk about the three features here. Automatic maintenance can do the backup. The backup is basically a full database backup. Yes, DB2 can do incrementals and deltas and all that. And if you want to do that, that's fine, but you don't use automatic maintenance to do that. The idea here is if you've made enough significant changes to your data after a certain time or enough log space, then it'll do the backup. If you don't have enough changes or enough time hasn't went by, then it won't do the backup. So it's an intelligent backup based on usage, whichever comes first. So it's not automatically doing a backup every week. It may do backups more frequently as the database is being used more frequently and less frequently as it's less used. After that, backup, automatic backup follows all the regular backup rules to tape or disk or Tivoli. And if you're only an archive, if you're an archive log, you can do an online backup. If you're only in circular mode, then you can only do an offline backup. And it's similar to Oracle, so it has to obey those. If it has to do an offline backup because you're in circular mode, for example, then you better have an offline maintenance window set for it. Otherwise, it can't do that. That's what the offline window would be used for in this case. Now, the online and offline window, I see typically folks will say, I'm online after 5 p.m. to 6 a.m. Monday through Friday, and Saturday and Sunday all day is offline, something like that. So you can, your online and offline windows can be independent of each other and usually are. So the DB2 advantage here is that DB2 only runs backups that are needed to be run. It's really much smarter than just running a regular backup and much more complete than running incrementals and deltas because you get a full backup. Automatic reorg is the next thing I want to talk about. Truth be told, the autonomic computing daemon does backups first, then he does run stats, and then he does reorg afterwards because we need statistics in order to intelligently know how to do reorg. But I'm talking about reorg second because it's a little simpler to talk about than run stats. So reorg you choose the tables that you want the reorg check on. There is a stored procedure for indexes and data. It goes through and checks. And if you need to do a reorg, it does the reorg. Now that filter is you can say I only want some tables by this name or by this schema or by this size. And you have a bunch of other options that I'm not going to go into detail here of how you want the storage to be done and so on. But the bottom line here is that it gives you the opportunity to reorg tables automatically without ever touching them again. Now the one downside or the one caveat that I must state here is that if you use automatic maintenance to do reorgs, he only does the classic reorg, which is basically a shadow copy. It's our fast reorg where the table is copied over into a shadow and then switched over when the reorg is done. Very fast and thorough, but you can only read from the table when you're doing it and not writing to it. So basically, reorg on data is done offline, and it needs an offline window. If that is not agreeable to you, you can do the reorg check and simply tell the autonomic maintenance guy to just notify me. Don't do the work. Just let me know when you do the check if I have any tables that need to be reorged, and then you can go ahead and do an online reorg that allows full read and write on your own. So at minimum, reorg can be a nice checking mechanism, but he won't do the reorg for you because you simply don't want him to decide when a table is offline to be reorged. If you have an offline window, though, like a weekend when you can do that, it works beautifully for you there. All right, so the bottom line here is that DB2 allows for automatic reorg of table data. And by the way, DB2 does a reorg of indexes, which allows the index to be fully accessed while it's being reorged because it's also offline. It also lets you read from it, not be writing to it. So we reorg tables and indexes. And as you know, Oracle rebuilds indexes. We reorg them. Now, in slide 31, auto run stats. Out of the box, as I said, it already does run stats. It's a very low-level, contentious type of processing. It uses special kernel locking protocols that are non-intrusive. Out of the box, there's no reason to have this not running. It does a compare of histogram on a per-table basis, looking through a very sophisticated algorithm. It doesn't just look at number percent of rows affected. It also considers the size of the table. For example, very small tables automatically run statted on. It doesn't matter. It doesn't care about that. Very big tables may need less of a size to initiate a run stat than 10%. And also the table's usage is taken into consideration. So that's basic run stats. There's an advanced run stat feature that lets you profile. And what that means is this guy can automatically be saying, gee, my run stats are a little bit more complex than it's just a simple run stat. If you want, it's like an analyze in Oracle. We want to do things with distributions or see particular stats on some columns or do some Bernoulli sampling or something like that. Well, when you turn this on, then the automatic maintenance feature will collect the stats and determine what the best run stat is for you to do more sophisticated stats on those particular tables. And if you turn the update on, it'll update the profile for that table. And that's a unique feature in DB2. A profile for a table means the run stat characteristics is saved with the table. So, for example, if you have a column in Bernoulli sampling and you say set profile, then that run stats command is kept with the table itself. And from there on in, you don't have to run the run stats command with all its variation. You just say run stats table. And when you do that, or use profile, run stats table or use profile. When you do that, it reads the profile and then uses it to do the statistics on. That keeps you from having to keep a bunch of scripts on all the variations of run stats for all variations of your tables. And I find that to be a DB2 advantage, is that DB2 stats gathering has a very sophisticated algorithm to determine collection requirements, and it can exploit stats profiling that is unique to DB2. The last slide here on stats that I think you should know about are real-time stats. This is such a cool feature. What this is saying is anytime a query is run, DB2 can autonomically collect stats for it if it thinks it can do it in less than 5 seconds or later by default. So that means if you have a query that might run for hours and it also determines that the stats are stale and it says I can kind of extrapolate stats in a few seconds, I'm going to do that, use those, and then make the query faster on the fly. So that is a really, really cool DB2 advantage, is that real-time stats is unique, and you can change that five-second requirement, by the way, if you are so inclined. So slide 33, the automatic maintenance story in Oracle is a little complicated to discuss one-on-one. So first of all, keep in mind, this only stuff only comes to Oracle Enterprise Manager. You do have statistics collection coming out by default. It's basically a job that runs. It's an intelligent job, but its stale stats is defined as 10% row changes. Now, you can change that yourself, but you have to change it. In DB2, those are determined by itself automatically by the engine and the histogram it collects for each table. So we don't go and say what, you know, row changes are table by table in DB2. It just does it. And you can change that for Oracle, but there's more work involved in changing that row change default. And then it only uses the row change default. It doesn't use
whether or not the table is heavily used or not, or if it's small or big. And so think about it, 10% row change on a billion row table is much different than a 10% row change on a 100 row table. DB2 takes that in consideration. Also, because it's a job, you submit multiple jobs to do stats collection. When the job's over, there's no opportunity for stats collection until the next job. And DB2 is part of the daemon that's running, and it can be collecting stats any time during the window. So you can collect stats that may stale during the day multiple times. Oracles is only collected during the job when it's run. If you want it to be done more than once, you better run more than one job. Reorgs are not manual at all. Sometimes people use Move or they use one of the tuning pack to reorg a table. Remember, this happens for DB2 autonomically, and it doesn't, of course, reorg index as it rebuilds. And like I said before, DB2 has an idea of reorging indexes as well. And finally, with backups, DBCA just schedules an incremental backup. But doing incremental backups is not the same as doing a full backup only on databases that have changed significantly enough to require it. It's a little bit different approach. That isn't a huge difference, but it is one. So bottom line here is that we think DB2 DBAs that are new to DB2 will love this automatic maintenance feature and be able to use this for many of their databases. Just a slide advertising more ways to learn about DB2. There's a proof of technology that I have authored. This is an excerpt from that, and you can have that done at hopefully at a site near you. We have professional education courses here that you can go to and sign up for to get more detailed training. The proof of technology is a little high level. The education is much more deep. There's a workshop that's new. It has free certification testing. It's kind of in between proof of technology and training. You might want to check that out. There's self-study courses and other kind of preparation exams for you. So I thought I'd include that in your slide, in the slide here for you to do your next steps if you're interested in that. Okay, so I'm a few minutes over my hour that I was given, but not much more. And now we go to the chat part of the chat with labs. And I'm going to go to my Q&A here and see how many questions are queued up. And okay, so let me get started with some of the questions. Oh, yeah, I was reminded here to don't forget about information on demand coming up next month. If you guys haven't heard about that, ask your DB2 representative, your IBM representative about information on demand. Thanks, Lee, for reminding me. Okay. Now, I'm asked about the link to the slides. Actually, there's a you can go to ibmcom.db2labchat, and there will be a download there. I think it's already there. But what isn't there yet, of course, is the recording of this particular meeting. So as soon as this is recorded and created, we'll upload that as well. But I think the slides are already there. I was notified by Rob that that happened. If it's not there, then send me an email. My email is here, by the way. I'm at bert.vlpondo@us.ibm.com. So you can send me an email and say, hey, you promised me the slide is not there, and I'll make sure that's worked out. Okay. So let me go to the next slide. Hold on a second here. Okay, someone said that the slides are there, so they're available. I'm getting a lot of, where are the slides? Where are the slides here? Let me go through here. Okay, also I'm getting a reminder to mention IDUG. If you guys don't know about International Database User Group, you can Google that and find the IDUG community. We have a national one that's coming, I think, in next year in Denver, but there are also local IDUG chapter. So Google that if you want to find more about DB2. Okay, so I'm getting rid of these questions about the deck. We got a whole bunch of them. Okay, let's talk about automatic maintenance. The first question related to the material. Can automatic maintenance be aware of instances on a server farm? Automatic maintenance, be aware of instances on a server farm. So let me make clear here. The automatic maintenance feature is at the database level. It's set up on the actual database, not the instance level. So I'm going to get a little anal in my answer here. You can have multiple databases per instance, by the way, as a lot of you DB2 folks know, Oracle folks may not know. Automatic maintenance can be running on one database in an instance and not on the other, on others. The way that it works is an autonomic computing daemon is running. If you have that automatic maintenance set to on, then it has the opportunity to do any of the pieces of maintenance that you want it to do. The location of where it is doesn't really matter. The database is simply set up to run automatic maintenance doing its thing or not. So I don't see any reason why you couldn't use automatic data, maintenance on databases that are on a server farm. It's simply the way that it will do those maintenance for each individual database, and where the database sits is immaterial. My second question here I got from Marcus Hamill is it possible to do run stats in parallel like an Oracle or ZOS? And the answer is yes, I believe so. Parallelism is automatically done for most of the DB2 utilities, and that's considered a utility. And then the answer is simply yes. Okay, slide 30. Can indexes on partition tables be rebuilt truly online, allow write access? So let me go to slide 30 to answer this question. So this is how this works. When you do a reorg, you choose whether you want to do the data and the indexes or both. The data has to be done in an offline window for the reasons that I mentioned before, in that it has to do a classic reorg. So because of that reason, the table itself is offline for any DML. So you can be running SQL and reading from it, but you can't be writing. I'm not sure if you can initiate indexes all by themselves outside of automatic maintenance that will just do a allow write access. That I'm not sure about the answer. I know automatic maintenance is doing the indexes with the table, and that table is already taken offline, if you will. So it's a moot point regarding automatic maintenance, Marcus. Whether or not you can do the index allow write access individually outside of automatic maintenance, which I think you're getting to in your question, I'm going to have to table that one. I don't know the answer to that right offhand. I'd hate to answer wrong. So I'm going to keep that question and go to the next one. Sorry, but I will try to answer this. If you send me an email, say I'm the guy to ask about the automatic rate maintenance index, I'll get an answer for you, Marcus. But I don't have the answer for that. Okay, so the next question is Bob Beal. He's asking, where are the times for the maintenance window set? That's a good question. If you are using the GUI, then it actually is a drop-down that says set online window. And you can choose Monday through Friday, or I want every other day, and I can spin through and say a start and stop time. So in the GUI, it's basically a bunch of drop-downs. And then when you say set, it actually is writing to an XML file that writes that in an XML format. It's hard to describe that. I've seen that XML format, but it'll be something like online window, days, Monday, Wednesday, and then hours and such. So it creates an XML record for the time that you set. So if you're good at writing the XML, or you want to have XML and you just want to make a tweak to it, you actually don't have to use the GUI to set your maintenance windows. If you already have a skeletal XML file, you can just tweak it and then just apply it. But most folks use the GUI tools to set that, and Control Center and Data Studio both have a way to set that online window. The reason why I bring up the XML file is because I had a customer once. They were an ISV, and in an unrelated thing, I saw their I was flipping through their manual, and on the early pages of the manual, they had about 10 pages of walking through their DB2 setting automatic maintenance for their product. And I asked the developers, why did they have this? And they said, well, because we really like automatic maintenance and we want to use it, but, you know, we have to, of course, flip through the GUI in order to set it. And I said, no, that's not true. Let me show you how to do the get and set policy. And I did a couple of tests with them real quick, and we got all the policy information out of one that they thought was the way they wanted it set. And then that became a part of the install script. So when they install their product, they just simply ran the set, and they could delete 10 pages out of their instruction manual because automatic maintenance was set for them according to their needs for that particular ISV using the stored procedure technique. All right, so I've got another question. Also by Bob, is there a command line way to set maintenance window times? Yeah, so that's what I just said. So the XML, it's not really a command line. It's an execution of a stored procedure, or there's two to get, and then there's two to set. So it's an execution of stored procedures. And, Bob, you can send me an email. I think I have an example of that I gave to that one customer. I'll look back in my archives and show you how to do that. But it's pretty cool. It works. It worked for them, and they were happy I solved that problem, not having to use the GUI for automatic maintenance. Okay. Let's see. We got one from Rudy Betke. If you have three databases, does STSMM work best with three separate instances for each database, or one instance that has all three databases? Wow, that's actually an excellent question. And I will say this as a disclaimer, that I have seen this debated in IDUG forums. So I've seen forums on STMM, and some people tout it as the end-all, be-all way to do memory, and others say, no, it doesn't work for me in these particular cases. And so I see self-tuning memory management used all sort of different ways. I will say this, that most tuning in production is best when I have found, just in general, when you have a one database per one instance model. And the reason is not just about memory, but about other things. Well, memory, but like, you know, the way that you're going to do connections and other things that tie the instance to the database. So it's usually best in databases that require top performance that you have one instance and one database in production. And that's where STMM really is going to be utilized the most. So I'd have to say, in general, my opinion would be that you'd want one database per instance to get the most out of tuning anyway. So that would be probably your model or paradigm with using it in STMM as well. Otherwise, I don't have an answer for if you don't have that need and you are running multiple databases per instance, say in a test or development scenario, I really don't have an answer whether it's best, because I've seen the experts debate this. Some will say they don't even like STMM to run all the time. They like to run it, have it tune the database well enough, and then they flip it off and let it be static after that. So there's a lot of debate on that, and there may be a best practices paper that I can send you if you want even more detail, but I haven't seen it. Okay, let's see here. All right, Marcus, another question. STMM will work on separate database interfaces, but will use almost one CPU for tuning. Okay, so I'm getting a comment here. Let's see. Ricardo, is there a way to do a hard memory limit to use DB2, including automatic maintenance? We have seen issues with instance memory parameter does not limit the memory usage. Is there a way to do a hard memory limit to use DB2? Well, okay, first of all, automatic maintenance isn't really about memory at all, right? It's about backing up, it's about reorgs and about run stats. It's true it's needing memory to do those things. So I guess if the question means can you limit memory for just those things, I don't think so. I don't think so. I don't think you can necessarily limit memory usage for just those kind of features. It's going to be a utility, and remember, it will obey the utility throttling within some limits. So this probably comes into the utility throttling discussion that we had earlier, But automatic maintenance doesn't allow you to throttle him down too low. But he still would use util impact limit to about 7%. So you can dial him down, I think, as low as 7, but I don't think you can dial him lower than that, at least the last time that I looked and I updated that presentation. So the memory usage there would be basically by utility throttling, and automatic maintenance does budget a little bit compared to the other utilities that are running. All right, so we've got another question. There's a question on automatic rear. Can you specify the temp space? Yeah, I didn't kind of went through that slide pretty quick. I'm actually on that slide right now. And if you notice, one of the things it says is your offline storage location or temp storage location right there on slide 33 or 30, wherever I'm positioned at. And you can say what the temp space is. I think the way that it works is if you don't specify a temp space, it uses the same table space that the object is already in, so the table or the index. Or you can specify someplace else to be able to do that offline storage while it's doing the classic reorg. Okay. Let's see. Okay, well, somebody is correcting me here. Mark looked it up and said that run stats are done with one thread. I'd have to look that up myself. I was thinking all the utilities used multiple threads, but if he's found that in documentation, that's fine. I haven't seen that. Let's see. The question here, can two SAP applications running on DB2 and Oracle be connected? Can two SAP applications running on DB2 and Oracle? Well, that's a real loaded question because SAP is a vendor, but I can say if it's non-SAP, you can connect applications through the use of federation. So in DB2, we simply point to an Oracle source of the federated object, and we can select from that table through the federated object, and that Oracle table or SQL Server table or any other database will look like a DB2 table, even using it for joins and so on. Whether or not you can do that through SAP, I don't know. I don't know if SAP utilizes federation or not, so I'm going to not answer that question specifically about SAP because I don't know enough about SAP to answer it. All right, let me get down to – all right, we already got that question. I'm getting some of my questions reused here. Okay, autostats, is there any tools store procedures to know what tables are queued? Let's see, so is there a tool store procedures to know what tables are queued for run stats? Wow, that is a really excellent question, Thiru. I know this, that when it goes to do something in math, like let's say it goes through and it determines I need to do run stats on 100 tables, and it can't finish them. It gets through 10 of them. RunStats is a bad example because it does those pretty quick. But let's say 1,000 tables, and it does 800 of them, and then it runs out of window. It will give you a notification that will tell you, I still have these other 200 tables I need to do RunStats on, by the way, boss. So you will get an exception listing of the tables it couldn't do the work on. I don't know if there's any way to tell which ones it's queuing up and running right now or the ones it's about to do. I don't think so. I haven't seen that. If there's any IBMers listening that know that answer, please send me that answer. But I don't think there's a way or a sort of procedure to know what tables are queued up that it knows it needs to be done until it's done. So once the run stats are done, if there's any left over, you will get a notification, one notification listing the number of tables it wasn't able to finish a run stat or a reorg on. So, but I don't think there's a way to tell that while it's happening. I haven't seen that in any documentation or anywhere. Again, if there's an IBMer listening and knows that for sure, send me that answer. I'll get it through to Thiru, but I doubt it. Let's see. Another question here. If backups are outside control of Autonomics, are run stats still smart enough to not run when backups are running? Backup run by Tivoli on a scheduled auto run stat. We'll check this. I don't know. Now, that's saying that you said, I don't want to do backups in my autonomics, I want to do it myself. Are the backups, are the Runstat smart enough not to? Well, you know, all the detail I've read about Runstat and its low kernel locking is it's basically when anybody's doing anything, it says you got it. So backups are one of the least, I mean, Runstats are one of the least intrusive things that you can do that DB2 does for itself. So, you know, my guess is the answer is yes, that they are smart enough not to collide with anything that's running at all. Are there plans to, there's a question by Marcus, are there plans to implement a reorg share level change like ZOS? Okay, so I want to be clear on this. You're asking about can you do a, you know, update on a reorg? The answer is yes. I didn't want to imply that you cannot do an online or share level change, that is, being able to do updates while you're reorging in DB2. That is a capability. We call that an online reorg. What I was saying is that the automatic maintenance feature doesn't use it. And the reason for this is because it's a relatively slow reorg. So the designers have told me that they don't want this reorg taking up the whole window or going, you know, a long time. So I didn't mean to imply, if you've got that information, then please let me correct myself. You can do an online or reorg share level change like you can in ZOS or in Oracle, but the automatic maintenance feature doesn't implement that. So that's why I said that if you think you can't do a read-only classic reorg or shadow copy or offline reorg, but it's called multiple things, then use the reorg as a check only, have it notify you that these tables need to be reorg, and then you can implement the reorg that's online. Okay, so Marcus, how can I use temp space for those tables, only sufficient free space for their corresponding table space? So the temp space parameter there that you're asking about, Marcus, is regarding the reorg only, right, not the other features. And you can't point that for just some tables. Any table that might need a reorg that it finds in that particular go-around, it will use as a temp space. There isn't any way that I know of that you can say, I only want one table to use this temp space, but the others to use something else. I don't think that is a feature at all in the automatic reorg. Okay, so we're getting here a question. See if I can here. Can't read the question. I'm gonna have to get back to that one. So another question from Mark is, does automatic backup issue a backup for table spaces with not log transactions? Okay, so let me be clear on this one. This, again, is an issue where DB2 has a lot of capability to do a backup on table space or a backup on incremental or incremental delta. But the online automatic maintenance facility doesn't use those. So to answer your question specifically, automatic backup does not work at the table space level only. Okay? DB2 does. And if you need to do table space backups, then you will simply turn off this automatic maintenance feature for it, not use it, and do it the traditional way of running jobs for table space backups. Or, you know, doing incrementals or incremental deltas. So we still have that capability in DB2. We just aren't going to be able to exploit it through the autonomics. Let's see. Okay, so there's a question here. How do you set up the windows for maintenance? I think I answered that already. So, yeah, Data Studio can do that, and the Control Center can do that. The Control Center is a Java-based interface, so I believe you do need an X window session, Eric. The Eclipse session, I'm not sure if you need X Windows for the Eclipse-based type of usage. Plus, you can have that on a Windows client and then simply connect to the database remotely without necessarily being on a server terminal. So I don't think you always need an X Windows session for that. But yes, we have a GUI, two different GUIs, the old classic one, which is Control Center, and the newer Data Studio one. They both have an interface to automatic maintenance. And by the way, that's the way that I would learn automatic maintenance. I've got to get through some questions here. I'm going to give other people a chance that I haven't answered questions for. So here's a question from Atisham. We have a 24 production environment, and we need to run reorg, but we don't want to lock transactions. So that's where my answer was, Atisham, that I would use this feature to tell you that a table needs to be reorged. But since he does an offline or shadow copy, one that locks writes, then you would do him just to notify the tables that are needing to be updated, and then you would kick that off your online reorg yourself. That way you can keep your 24/7 running. You don't have any offline time. It's just that online reorg will take longer than the offline would have. Let's see. I'm running out of time. I have like 1 minute, or am I done? I think I'm getting really close here, and I have so many more questions I can't get the answers to. So I'm at 1 o'clock Central Time, which is my end. And I think I'm not going to take any more questions here. I've got a whole bunch more. I'm sorry I couldn't get to them. I'm expecting the moderator to take over? No? All right. Well, I'll keep talking until she interrupts me. So we asked about the control center. It's deprecated. Remember, deprecated just means we're not updating anymore and we reserve the right to get rid of it on the next level. It's still supported. I still talk about it. But, yes, you can use Data Studio, and Data Studio does all the things here I talked about that I believe that the for the online maintenance that the control center does. Can we set auto instance memory, auto-config? I don't remember what memory parameters came out of auto-config. Let me go back there and look. Just the ones here that I have listed are the ones that come out of instance memory, and the answer looks to be no. Auto-config doesn't set instance memory. Let's see here. I'm getting reminded that if you're using SAP, remember SAP has all these things preset for you. So that's why I was a little hesitant to talk about SAP, because we have the cockpit that maintains SAP, and also there's a lot of presetting in DB2 that sets and tunes SAP for you. So in an SAP environment, take all the things I've talked about with a grain of salt. They may or may not use these autonomic features. I'm not schooled enough to know what they do and don't do. So please don't think that you can go back and change your SAP applications unless SAP allows that.
Hey, Bert, this is Jeannie.
Okay. Hi, Jeannie.
Hi. We've got so many questions in the queue, but we've run out of time. So I'm thinking that what I'll do is I'll consolidate all these questions for you and send them to you, and you can either get back with everybody individually or maybe just answer all the questions, and we can send them out to the attendee list. It's up to you.
That'll be fine. Yeah. Yeah, I like that. That'll be good, and I'll learn something new. I usually do in every session I give. So I'll do that. I know there's a lot, so that's going to be some work.
Thank you. It's a great call.
Well, I don't promise it back right away, but I will do it.
Okay, super. Thank you.
All right. You're welcome. Thank you.